Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts. All my girls at the party, look at that body, shaking that thing like you never did see. Got a nice package, all right. Edit.
4, 2,
it's time for your Sunrise Guys.
I'm not arguing that our package is the best, although I think we do have a very strong package to offer.
Dirt and Sprague.
We have the best package.
Wait time I get excited.
Andy Dirt Johnson. Brandon Sprague.
I'm not fourth fiddle. I want to be number one.
It works.
Dirt and Sprague.
When you're about to get freaky at night, you think about it.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Hope your weekends were great. We had a lot of fun in the first hour of the radio program. So far, we have only pissed Dirt off one time.
Only one time, but we got a long ways to go. We're only 1 hour in.
We are only one. Maybe we have one per hour. Maybe that'll be, we'll finish with four in the
show.
Hit
our quota this hour. Let's see what it is.
Yeah. If you missed any of the fun from hour one or any of the hours of the radio program, you can always check it out, 1051thefan.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. We podcast the show every day once we get off the air. We'll continue having a lot of fun, and we have two guests, one of which we're going to hear from in just a minute, Bill Conley of ESPN.
Yes.
We're going to have a football segment. So the World Cup final was yesterday.
It ended.
Bill is a big soccer guy.
Yes, he is.
But he also covers college football, and so we've got Big Ten Media Day next week. We got SEC Media Day kicking off literally right now, as Greg Sankey has already given his opening comments. And so we'll welcome Bill Conley into Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague here in just a second. And then in the 8 a.m. hour, we will dive into the Jason Quick article that came out yesterday evening.
Things are going great.
Our city officials and Tom Dunnan are best friends.
Yeah.
And at 8:27, I promised it on Friday, so I tried to deliver, and I think I did. Chip Alexander, longtime sports writer in Raleigh, will join us to relive the beginning moments of Tom Dunnan and the Hurricane experience. Because although politically they may be a little different than us, they had a little bit of a, are we going to fund an arena district?
Yes.
And also, by the way, they've started renovating their arena.
Right.
So I just want to see, like, did they just kind of just give it all to Tom and never push back at all what the experience was like?
Are there union workers in their arena? Because that seems to be a sticking point.
One of many sticking points. Taxes is obviously going to be a sticking point.
Right.
As it's off to a bit of a shaky start. Here in Portland.
He's got a great Twitter handle, too, by the way. His Twitter handle is ice_chip.
Ice underscore Chip?
It's a great Twitter handle. For a guy who covers hockey and his name is Chip.
It's a 12-minute segment. I don't want to lose too much. You may need to kick it off with, why is that the Twitter handle?
He's the ice chip. That's what they call him, man.
So just all about the Hurricanes?
I mean, I know he covers some other stuff, too, in the Raleigh area, because you got the college basketball.
He's covered
everything. Over there too.
I've looked up his history.
Yeah, he's covered a ton. I pulled him up because you said we had him on, and I'm like, that's a hell of a Twitter handle. We'll lead with that when we get him on.
All right, well, we'll get to that coming up in the 8 a.m. hour, but we start the second hour of the radio program welcoming in our good friend, Bill Conley, in the Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague here on a Monday morning. Bill, good morning. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
We're doing great. We're going to try to execute something here on the air. I'm going to ask you football questions, and my co-host Dirt is going to ask you football questions. So I will leave it to Dirt to actually ask the first question.
First question of the day.
Of the interview.
Okay. Order up first question of the day for Bill Connolly, our great friend. Mm. I see comments from Pat Narduzzi last week. We have not played the audio yet, but I want to get to it. And I know Bill Connolly's big into the rankings and the conferences and, you know, which one's the best and where do the teams stack up? How do we react to the head coach of Pitt, who I believe, if my numbers are correct, he's 1-6 all time against the Big Ten, saying that the Big Ten is not as good as the ACC?
I think we know how we respond to this. You know, coaches can say stuff. You know, lies are free, and you can convince yourself of whatever you want, I guess. I mean, ACC's power conference, and they had a team that almost won the national title last year. Could be worse, but no, it's not quite not quite up to the Big Ten standard.
On that follow-up, we had that debate last week, Bill, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. We were looking, ACC Media Day is going on and playing audio from coaches and all that, and I just kind of tend to look at it, and maybe I'm not giving enough credit to somebody else, whether that's a Louisville, a James Franklin year one, Virginia Tech, SMU. It seems like it's Miami and everybody else, which can be laughable because they didn't even make their own conference championship game last year. When you look at the ACC, does it have that vibe to you going in, or is it a deeper race than that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, from an SP Plus perspective, Miami's at number 8, and then the next best team's at number 23. And, you know, to their credit, it's going to be a fun race for number 2 potentially, because there are, let's see, 9 teams between 23rd and 44th. You know, anybody could be second, but it does feel like, you know, acknowledging that, you know, one good postseason run doesn't kind of eliminate all of Mario Cristobal's regular season troubles. They always manage to fall into a rut when they're not supposed to. And so unless that kind of mentality has changed, they could be vulnerable to a slump as well. But on paper, yeah, it's Miami versus the field.
Order up!
Bill Conley, our guest here, ESPN, ESPN.com. SEC Media Days are kicking off. And Bill Conley is joining us to talk a little college football and some football. So we had the World Cup final yesterday, Spain and Argentina. What would we rate the World Cup final game?
Not great, but it wasn't surprising in any way that it wasn't great, since Spain really just kind of dominates without scoring a billion goals, and Argentina's entire goal was to get to the 75th minute with a chance to win. So it really kind of played out. It was kind of the most unsurprising scoreless first 75 minutes ever, and then things kind of opened up at the end, but there was no goal, et cetera, et cetera. Like, right team won, for sure, and Argentina certainly didn't cover itself in glory with its general composure, but in the end, Spain was just absolutely incredible. I've never seen a defense. There are two ways to play good defense in soccer. One of them is to dominate the ball and therefore not give your opponent any chances. And then the other is to, like, win duels and stop your opponent from when they're in, good positions to score. They did both of those perfectly throughout the entire tournament. It was pretty impressive to watch.
Have we ever had football and football link up more than Spain winning, so every person in America that watches or doesn't watch soccer could just say, defense wins championships?
That's right. If they don't score, you don't lose. That's soccer. That's every Texas high school football coach. That's pretty much everybody.
Yeah, we're looking at the new look Pac-12. By the way, this is being bilingual in football is a phenomenal skill.
It's great.
That very few people have.
I thought it'd be a lot of fun with
it. It's like going back and forth to an English and Spanish in the same interview, and I'm incredibly impressed. Looking at the new look Pac-12, we've been having conversations about Oregon State. We had Phil Steele on last week, and he said he's been doing his magazine since 1995, and Jamarcus Shepherd was the first coach that never gave him, that refused to give him any sort of indication on a depth chart. And he called him and he was like, you know, can you just point me in the right direction here? And Shepherd said, no, I'm not going to do that. He said that's the only time it's ever happened to him in 30 years of making the magazine. That leads people to wonder, does Shepherd know what he's doing? Is he outsmarting the room here? When you look at the new look Pac-12, kind of similar to the ACC question, is it Boise Gap? You know, fill in the blank from there. Is it more jumbled near the top? Because he kind of gave us a separation of, you know, Boise and Fresno and I think Colorado State. And then he had Oregon State and Washington State in the bottom half of the conference. Do you view the Pac-12 that way? And how difficult is it with so many new faces and new coaches on top of that?
At first, I thought you meant Shepherd had Oregon State in the bottom half of the
Pac-12. No, yeah. Hopefully he doesn't. Wow. That would be a bit of a problem.
Yeah, no, it's the same deal. Not to lean on SP Plus too much, but Boise State's 38th, and then there are 1, 2, 3, 4 teams between 71st and 88th. So that's the biggest gap of any conference, really. And it's not hard to see why. I mean, that's Boise, you know, has a love-hate relationship with expectations for the most part. Sometimes they exceed them dramatically, and other times they just kind of sleepwalk through periods of the schedule. But they're clearly the superior team on paper, with Madsen back, with Virgin Morgan back, et cetera, lots of really, really good running backs still. So I don't have a problem with that. But yeah, it's the same as the SEC or ACC, really. And eye of the beholder who's number two. San Diego State looks the part because of defense, but Fresno State was really quickly adapted to that kind of North Dakota State identity, I thought, and could be really, really interesting this year. Wazoo, obviously, just massive change every single year, but on paper, there's some things to like. Texas State could be interesting after losing a ton of close games, but bringing back Brad Jackson. So should be a really, really fun conference when it comes to the race for number two. Number one seems pretty clear.
Yeah.
What did you feel about the World Cup from start to finish being in North America? We obviously had Canada, us, and Mexico hosting, but it just I was one, Bill, to give you the opinion. Like, I just got into the Premier League for the first time this year. I picked Nottingham Forest. It was hell of a year to pick that team because they almost got relegated. But that was kind of my first introductory season of real football. And so I kind of went in. I was a little bothered by the amount of money that it was being talked about tickets would cost and tourism. And like, I don't know. I thought it was a very negative kind of vibe. And then I came in and the World Cup started and I saw these little towns, you know, gravitating towards these countries they don't really know much about. We had a Lawrence, Kansas old guy ranting about how happy he was to have Algeria in Lawrence. And I thought that was cool. Yep. So like, and then you had superstars, right? Erling Haaland became like probably the biggest star of all of them because of his unique personality and his build. How would you grade what the World Cup was from your expectation standpoint to how it all played out?
Yeah, I was, you know, I'm wrong about plenty, but I told my editor beforehand, you know, everybody was so negative about the 48-team expansion. And I mean, I'm pretty clear on where I stand about a 2014 college football playoff expansion too, but I was just like, I think this is going to be incredible because, I mean, among all other things, we now have, like, you know, the odds of a Cinderella, the odds of an underdog that everybody adopts are now huge because there's going to be tons of Cinderella, you know, candidates. And in the end, a lot of them ended up, you know, making memories. And it just, I think the momentum that this tournament had early on with the Cape Verde stories and the DR Congo stories and Curaçao's goalkeeper, you know, almost setting the saves record and all these things. And then that kind of gave way to the superstars, Erling Haaland making his impression on America. My 72-year-old neighbor from Wisconsin now loves soccer because of Erling Haaland, pretty much. just fell head over heels in love with Erling Haaland and the Norway team. So, you know, you had that aspect and Mbappe and Kane and Messi, pretty much every superstar except Cristiano Ronaldo shining, which was okay. And then at the end, you had the four best teams in the semi. So it's really kind of whatever you like from a major tournament, you got it from this one. And it was great. I mean, price gouging was obnoxious, and like, as tends to be the case in America, they got away with it because they always do. We complain and then we buy the tickets anyway. But it really did, like you said, with the Algeria-Lawrence thing, with Chattanooga, Tennessee, falling in love with Spain, you know, just all the little different. We got the gross part of American sports industry with the prices and all that. We also got kind of the really charming parts as well, which was nice.
I think we should just adopt Erling Haaland at this point. I mean, he showed up back in Norway with a stuffed raccoon and a booze bottle, and he's listened to...
It seems like he might not mind being adopted at this point.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we could use a guy like that on our team, man.
What about the transfer? Him in the MLS?
Does the portal exist? Can we get him into the portal? How do we entice him? Let's get him a good NIL package. when I look at this upcoming college football season... What coach is under the most pressure to win a national championship?
I think the answer is always Ryan Day.
even though we got one 2 years ago?
I think that's just always that's kind of the but beyond that, beyond the fact that Ohio State is just always miserable anytime they're not winning the title, and even kind of seems like they're miserable when they are winning the title, this does feel like a big moment for Steve Sarkisian. It's really strange with this year. I kind of felt like he was fighting last year's wars with his portal movement. Like, he needed a better skill core and offensive line last year. And then he spent all season kind of developing pieces and making that unit better. And Arch Manning was number one in total QBR from November on and all these things. And then he chases off a whole bunch of guys to get like three big skill core transfers and a couple new offensive linemen. And I don't know, like if Cam Coleman and the running backs and all those guys stay healthy, then I guess it's fine. But suddenly they kind of have a depth issue where they're a couple of injuries away from playing a ton of freshmen, whereas they spent all last year developing the depth they don't have anymore. So that's going to be a really big thing. And also the fact that Sark's defense has been better than his offense the last couple of years, and he goes and fires the defensive coordinator for Will Muschamp, who hasn't really led a an elite defense in over 10 years, these are big risks. And I think they're risks that we haven't really talked about enough. So we'll see if it pays off. It absolutely could, because we know their talent level is still top five easily. But I don't think it's guaranteed to. It'll be interesting.
Order up! Bill Conley, our guest here, ESPN.com, for a football segment. Should we be in America debating right now the clutch gene factor of one Lionel Messi?
Well, I mean, I think that all got screwed up in the last game. But, you know, just generally speaking, it was very impressive. Argentina, basically, their ability to make themselves inevitable down the stretch of these games and then just have it pay off every single time was certainly unique. And the fact that England managed to blow a semifinal kind of the same way they did in 2018 to a certain degree when they led Croatia and lost, there's kind of the absence of a clutch gene we could talk about too if we really wanted to, but that would be mean, so I'm not going to go there.
Okay. If I gave you $50 to gamble on the national champion this year, would you take the Big Ten or the field?
Ooh.
That's a great question.
I'm going to say field. Oh. I think Big Ten's obviously more likely than any other conference with, well, I mean, it's Oregon's turn. You know, that's apparently the way
it is. Yeah, damn right it is, Bill. This is our moment.
Well, it's either that or Indiana's just never going to lose again. We'll see which one of those wins out. But, like Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana are three of probably the five or six most likely teams. But I think between Georgia and Texas and Miami and Notre Dame, I'd still kind of lean, even if it's like 55-45, I think I'd still lean towards the field.
Okay. Mm. Order up!
How do we get to the semifinals as a nation in this tournament? I'm tired of always hearing about us, and then we get to the same point every single time. How, Bill, do we cut through the noise and be a semifinalist at least at one point in my life in the World Cup?
I mean, it's a dice roll to a certain degree, right? Like, you get to a certain level of quality, and then you just hope the breaks play out the way they need to. Croatia made a final and Morocco made a semi. So there's nothing saying U.S. can't do that. But if you want to talk about being a top five or so level team, I don't know if it's possible, because like the teams that the countries that had like a 100-year head start seem to just continue to occupy all those top spots. But I did think it's been kind of interesting with Mauricio Pochettino's style. What we saw, you know, in the first four matches, or three minus the Turkey game where it was all backups, what we saw was a style that could overwhelm teams that had less or similar talent than the U.S. And then they played Belgium, a team that's seen all those things before and handled it just fine, even though I think the biggest issue in that match was the U.S. just getting completely like lost in the lights and losing themselves. You kind of have a choice. Like, you know, the old U.S. style where they made the quarterfinals in 2002, where it was just defend your heart out, have elite goalkeeping and counterattack really well. That's an underdog style, and that can beat top teams while, you know, losing to Honduras and Panama in qualification. Or you can try to make yourself, more athletic and you know, use that to your advantage and make yourself a little more upset proof, but then also not really give yourself the tool to handle the elite team. So it has been interesting. I like to think there's a balance out there somewhere, or just that, you know, the longer we go, the deeper the U.S. talent pool will get, because it is very deep right now, deeper than it was in 2002. But that is kind of the balance there. You either take a favorite tactic and don't pull upsets, or you use underdog tactics and pull upsets and get upset. So right. It's an interesting mix there.
Interesting. Yeah. Last one for me, and I'll put on a different hat for the last question, because I did see, I think you tweeted, you went to 10 World Cup games, if I'm not mistaken. Do we have a favorite moment and a favorite game that we were in person for?
Well, it was really cool to be at a semifinal. Just the magnitude of Spain-France was really cool. My favorite game, though, was Cape Verde, Saudi Arabia, because I'm forever an underdogs guy, and being able to see, you know, looking up at the TV above us in the press box to watch Spain-Uruguay and make sure that everything was going right there, and that whole adrenaline rush watching Cape Verde qualify and the kind of the party that happened after that. And I wrote my favorite piece after that. I'm going to have the fondest memory of that one, I think.
All right, there we go. Good stuff. Our first guest ever to Cafe de Dirt and Sprague. What would you order for breakfast right now if you were at a diner?
Ooh.
I've kind of had hash in my mind for a while. So some sort of So in some sort of hash-like thing, I got the hash browns. Some sort of protein in there. That's ringing. That's calling my name right now.
A corned beef hash with an egg over it. It's perfect.
I'm in.
Yeah, I'm in too.
Hot sauce.
Yeah, a little hot sauce in as well. We're always in on Bill Connelly, ESPN.com. Great college football coverage, and also avid, diehard football fan. So a football segment here, Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague. Bill, thanks for joining us, having fun with the segment. I'm sure we're going to catch up with you in August as college football gears up and gets closer to kickoff. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from our friend Bill Connelly of ESPN.com. A little football segment here in Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague.
One of one, man. Not many people can pull that off.
No.
He had a great collab with our guy Pate, too. Him and the two commissioners sat down. A meeting of minds for a long, lengthy discussion about college football. It was really good.
Really good stuff. A lot more to get into. Hour two rolls on. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 105.1 The Fan.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. Great stuff. From Bill Connelly of ESPN.com, trying to give you both a college football conversation and to recap the World Cup. The World Cup is done, buddy.
It came to an end yesterday.
I can look in his eyes and just get the general, yes.
Thank God I don't have to do this again for four more years. Is that what you're telling me? Yeah, that's exactly how I reacted yesterday.
I almost got you a Crystal Palace t-shirt yesterday.
Hey, I'd rock a Crystal Palace t-shirt. I mean, I'm not going to watch, but I'll jokingly become a fan of Crystal Palace. That'll be fun. I thought it ended fittingly for my viewing experience, and I will allow you two to opine on the game because I was bored out of my...
What is there to opine? That game was so boring.
I was bored out of my ever-loving mind.
No, if Argentina's goalkeeper was not making ridiculous saves,
it would have been 4-0.
It would have been over at halftime, and I would have moved on.
Pulling my phone out of my pocket every 90 seconds because I was bored and then fell asleep and missed the only goal.
Yeah.
You fell asleep during the goal in extra time, huh?
Yes, I did. I don't know exactly when I fell asleep. Yeah. I just woke up and there was confetti.
I'll say this. It felt
Somebody won. All right. That's good.
It felt like, to Swag's point, the goaltender for Argentina made that thing.
Goalkeeper, if you're going to be a football fan, it is goalkeeper.
He's going to come at you now.
Watch your team play a Game 7 live. And watch your team during the English Premier League season and not just when they're good, and get back to me there, pal. You didn't even watch your soccer team this year. You opted out of the Premier League.
They were irrelevant till the last few weeks when they actually won.
Okay, and what was your baseball team, irrelevant or the most relevant?
The most relevant.
You didn't watch that either.
I was so confident.
Were you middle-of-the-road Jason? I need him to not be bad but not be the best, and then I'll watch and care.
I'm just enjoying this show from the side, baby.
God,
that game sucked. We've already changed
of
to a different
all the
debate.
Things to correct in this segment. It's the goalkeeper.
Yeah, don't gatekeep, Swagger. That's not good.
The guy who says
you're
I
widening the
asleep.
Tent here. You got a guy in the tent with you now, and you just kicked him out of the tent.
No,
now he's not going to watch soccer anymore.
I walked out
that
of the tent. Now
you're gone. Fundamental one.
No, I'm watching. I'm watching my team play, and I'm not talking about the Premier League with him this year. That's what's going to happen. Okay. Sick goal though.
Yes.
That was an incredible pass with his head.
I'll take your word for it. Looked pretty cool.
Did you even see the replay?
I did not see the replay, no. I woke up and I was like, oh. And I asked the wife who won because I was kind of groggy. She said Spain and I said, okay. And I turned the TV off.
Well, did you see?
And thus ends my watch.
Did you?
Did you get
put
a full
my
month,
lantern out.
Full month worth of entertainment out of that?
No.
Stop.
No.
Stop.
Halftime show was entertaining. That was fun. I was awake
was
for
it?
The halftime show. I mean, it
wasn't.
It was. It led to conversations, did it not?
Well, so did...
I didn't watch the halftime show.
You missed the halftime show?
I want to be fully transparent. I did not watch it.
I knew
who was going to perform. I just didn't watch it.
I had the game, by the way, the entire time on Telemundo, so that made it a little
That's
more confusing.
That's what I was doing
I didn't know what they were saying. And then the whole reason to do it was to hear the 90-second goal call, and then I missed the goal call.
You must have been really in REM sleep there.
I was exhausted.
I think the skunky morning start really
It was a bit of a long day without a lot of sleep.
That'll take a bit out of you.
I'm sitting on the couch like, dude, I can't do this anymore. I can't. They're just pass it and pass it again and
did,
pass it
did
again.
Did you watch much of the post-match?
I did not. No, I turned the TV off.
So the trophy presentation, I'm always like impressed and underwhelmed at the same time about the World Cup
trophy. I did see the videos of that. They tried to shoo Trump away and he's standing awkwardly in the middle like, dude, get out of here. We're trying to take our team picture.
So, I gotta ask this. Mm-hmm. We know he loves the attention. Infantino is obviously trying to say, dude, get, go. They're doing their the build-up buzz, trophy raise team thing. And he just isn't moving. Does he know that by standing there, he's in it? Or does he literally have no idea how it all works?
I think he literally has no idea how it all works. Okay. I think he's waiting like, do I stand here? Do I do a photo op now? You could probably explain it to him, and I don't think he's paying attention to you explaining to him.
Well,
he's in front of cameras, in front of millions of people watching at home, and he's going to capitalize on that moment.
Here's the other thing. I know we have technology and stuff with photos where you can like literally remove people.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of funny to think of the idea that forever in that photo of them hoisting that trophy, Donald Trump is sitting in the front row of that photo.
Just standing right there.
Just standing, looking ahead.
Didn't we have beef with Spain, too? Didn't we go at Spain? Weren't we feuding over them? And they were tariffing us? We were tariffing each other?
What country haven't we tariffed? I've lost track.
Like, is this a frenemy? Is this an enemy? Is this a friend? I'm very confused
right
now.
Well, and I saw a report that he's telling Infantino, you need to get back here ASAP for the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. He said, while I'm alive, and I'm not sure if you're aware of this, they've already booked out the next two.
Have they?
They technically have.
Yes.
But have they?
Yeah, they have.
FIFA could do whatever they want.
How much money?
They're the most corrupt organization in sports, and it's absolutely ludicrous. That's why Tom Cruise up there in his $1 billion talking about unity and Scientology was weird at the start of the game. But you could do whatever you want with FIFA. If you want to bribe them enough, they'll give you the tournament whenever you want it. Saudi Arabia has also got a lot of bribe money.
They got a lot of bribe money. I don't think you can outbribe them.
I don't think that you can.
Yeah, they probably pivoted out of Live just to be able to make sure.
It's too soon. Yeah, you can't.
Maybe we could bribe Spain because Spain's getting the next one.
Yeah, but it's Spain, Morocco, and Portugal. That's three. That gets expensive.
That's a really cool World Cup.
Do any of them have a larger economy than California?
Spain might.
Spain would be the only one I would say does.
Only one with a chance.
Yeah. The other two, no way.
No chance.
No. But it was a good experience.
The World Cup was fun and large.
It was a great time.
It was fun. I'm not going to poo-poo the entire event. Seeing people come over in America and kind of discover our country and go through sights and sounds, there was a lot of social media stuff that was fun. The fan interaction at other sporting events was a lot of fun. The Scottish fans at Fenway, the Norway fans everywhere doing their row. Like, there was a lot of really cool stuff out of it. We got swept into American soccer for a very brief period, wondering, is this going to be different? Answer, it was not different.
No.
So, as a whole, the tournament was great, and there was a lot of memorable moments. I was not, like, that game yesterday sucked, and I fell asleep because I was bored out of my mind.
But it was a predictable suck. You knew with Spain
That's why when Spain made it, I was like, kind of sucks.
Same.
They're probably the best team, but they're not entertaining
to watch.
Did
you watch the third place game?
I did not.
Was absolutely bananas.
I almost texted the group. Because my round got over and we went to a pub, and it was probably 3 minutes into the match.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just on. And so we're sitting there watching this. And I started laughing, thinking about your take of like, why are we doing this? No one cares.
Soccer's great when nobody cares about playing defense or wants to be at the game.
Well, there's no consequences for losing that
game.
Right,
that's my whole point. So it's entertaining, isn't it?
It starts out the way it starts out, and it gets to 4-0. And I almost text to Swag and you, damn it, Swag called it, England cares, France doesn't.
Ah, yeah, and then they scored four unanswered.
By the time we got home from the pub, it was 4-3, and I went, what? And then I started watching, they scored another one, make it 5-3, and then it was, 6-4?
6-4, I think, the final, yeah.
If you give me that game in the final, I'm all about it, man. That sounds fantastic.
The other thing I was thinking about,
how many times is the over of 9.5 goals hit in a soccer match?
Is how many great fan bases came over to our country?
A lot of them.
And you know, they showed like their pride and their happiness to be representing their nation. And then they also like leaned into what America was, right? In every in all the good and bad sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, have you guys heard of Taco Bell? And we're like, well, it's currently passing around diarrhea. But yes, we have.
Memo, it always does that.
Yeah, well, it's a little more explosive this time.
Is this the parasite diarrhea or normal diarrhea?
And I liked that, and I kept thinking, like, when the World Cup, and maybe this is coming from a place of slight ignorance or memory holding, like, when the next World Cup comes around and it's in Portugal, Spain, Morocco,
mm-hmm.
I really want to be interested to watch the American citizens that go over to watch USA. Do we care? I don't feel like we carry the same level of pride and passion. I know people love America. Obviously, it's a very polarizing, divided time in America itself. But when you see these other nations come over and take pride in what we have to offer while also showing and representing
their culture
and their pride and love, like Viking rowing at baseball games.
Right.
It makes me like reconsider or wonder about getting to that spot. We talk about USA soccer getting past the final 16.
Well, I think the Outlaws.
Hold on. I think it's more to me about, are we going to ever feel the way these other nations seemingly feel about their country? And it's not that their countries are perfect. They're certainly not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost a sense of just like the pride beneath the pride. Ours is so just grandstanding and just generically not what I view as, like, putting an eagle on your truck does not make you a better patriot than somebody driving a Prius. But I feel like in this country, there's a lot of people that view it that way. Or the reverse. I'm saving the nation by not getting gas. Like,
right.
Oh, I'm better than you. And I don't feel that. Or at least I didn't feel that from those other countries' fan bases. And I just wonder, will we be like that by the time the next World Cup comes around?
I think the Outlaws, which is the dedicated supporters group, they were, you know, where the U.S. was playing their matches, they were there and had a presence. So I think there will be that presence. I think it also, can the soccer team actually develop some consistency? Will Pochettino stick around as the coach, manager, and stick? That's the other thing. They seem to switch coaches, you know, like hockey teams do, because
mm-hmm.
they don't get there, but they never build any consistency. There's never anything, you know, well, MLS switching up its schedule here next year help them get more on the global calendar. They'll be able to play international matches with their full teams the way everybody else does when they take the FIFA international breaks, all of that sort of stuff. Mm. So can the team continue to build? Can all these young guys to develop? Whether they're playing in the MLS, whether they're playing over in Europe, do we see them win a Gold Cup or something in the CONCACAF region to give you belief that they are actually prepared to take the next step and, as you said, try to get to a quarterfinal or possibly a semifinal? I think that is the piece of true belief that they might be able to do something significant in the World Cup that'll determine just how big an American presence over there.
But Norway had never done what they did, and they just came
out. Yeah, but they had Erling Haaland, and they had a
big star. That helps. Yeah, for sure, when you have a player of that caliber. I'm not going to speak for all the – I think some of the tough part is a lot of these places and fan bases have cool traditions that have been built in for a long time, and they bring them over. Like, you have a row or
bagpipes. Soccer's also the top sport or the one or two top sport in that country.
Exactly, right? And so you can sense it from them. The other part, and I'm not going to speak for the Outlaws or whatever the fan group is, because I'm not one of them, but I would imagine, I think my two cents on it 4 years out from now is that you're going to have a massive amount of Americans over in Spain in 4 years, because it's the first time, obviously, sans this World Cup, that it's been a reasonable place to go. Like, Spain's a place.
Portugal, too. That's
right. Like, it's
Morocco,
a place that is a very attractive vacation with or without the World Cup.
Right.
And now you add in that aspect of it, where I'm sure a lot of Europeans or South America, whatever, like a lot of people, despite some of the narrative that's out there, felt like, dude, let's go visit New York City and Los Angeles and let's go. Like, I haven't been to America.
Like, I would never go to Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. Where were the last two World Cups before this? Qatar.
Yeah.
Anybody want to go there?
Nope.
No, thanks. 2018, we had a Russia World Cup. Anybody want to go to Russia right now?
No.
No, thank you. Now you're in Spain. So I'm sure Saudi Arabia will be a little sparse when it comes to, you know, fan bases. Like, who the hell wants to go to Saudi Arabia? And it'll be a fall World Cup, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a big part of it. And that was the other takeaway for me, And look, FIFA's corrupt. They're the most corrupt organization in all of sports. They will go wherever the money goes, and that's their ethos and the only ethos they live by. But having it in a place where it was reasonable for people to get there, where the fan bases could go kind of immerse themselves in it, you just don't have that in Qatar or Saudi Arabia at times.
No, no.
And so I think the support in 2030 will be huge, because who the hell wouldn't want to go to Spain? I'd love to go to Spain.
I'd love to go to a match in Portugal. I think that'd be so awesome.
It'd be remarkable. Imagine watching them play Spain or Portugal in Portugal.
That'd be awesome.
It'd be awesome. So, yeah, I think the support will be great there. 2034, not so much, my friend.
Final grades? For us as a hosting nation for the World Cup in 2026.
Dude, last bone to pick I have on it, yep. To take a steaming dump all over it, the game being in New Jersey was ridiculously dumb. That's a soulless stadium in the middle of nowhere with nothing around it. There were so many cooler places that we could have played that game. Seattle, just to mention one, who was amazing in their support of it. Yeah. The L.A. atmosphere was great. There was something about that atmosphere yesterday and the soulless nature of the parking lot surrounding the stadium that just sucked. Like, this is dumb. Why are we playing it here? I'd give us an A-. I don't know if I'd go higher, you know. I'm sure there were some pitfalls here or there.
B+.
I thought we did really good, man.
How are we differentiating between the A- and the B+ here?
I don't know. I had not thought about my grade of hosting the World Cup until you just asked me live on the air, and I came up one off the top of my head.
I still think the overall cost and all of the stuff that went into
it. Price gouging?
Yeah, the price gouging.
We made a butt ton of money, though, as a country.
I hope it gets back to the host cities.
Was that the projected? Like, did we come over?
I saw a random number. And a lot of it's going to hotels, restaurants, like the places. People ended up
coming. If it's going into the economies of the host cities and they're actually getting it back. But it still needs to be, you know, a touch more fan-friendly.
That'll never happen.
And it won't ever happen.
It's FIFA.
How did they, because the projection coming in, when I was down on it, it was just like, there is no reservations. There is no.
No, the lead up to it was very, seemed disastrous.
How were they that wrong?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
I don't know.
It made me question a lot of the reporting and where are you getting your information and where is it coming from? Because you've watched the first handful of games and you're like, dude, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
The ticketing process needs to be streamlined. If it's not going to be less expensive, at least it needs to be more transparent and a lot easier to understand.
What was the get-in price yesterday? It was like $10,000, I think, just to get in the building.
So my daughter's best friend, or one of her best friends, they were in New York, and they were at Times Square watch party.
Oh.
Because they put it on the Jumbotron.
That's a fun thing to do.
And I did think, like, if I happen to be there, if get-in price is like $2,000, are you spending $2,000?
No.
No?
No.
For the final?
For the final?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not very often you could say in your life you saw a World Cup final. But no?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm okay.
Let's move on. It's football season now. Shout out the football bros out there and gals. We'll dive into the Blazers. Not so good news reporting coming from Jason Quick last night. We'll dive into that at 8 a.m. And we'll get a feel of how it's what it's like to go back and forth with Tom Dundon from somebody that experienced it. Chip Alexander and Raleigh will join us at 8:27. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 105.1 The Fan.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. We'll dive into the Blazers. Oh, no. The Blazers in the city hate each other. Taxes. Unions. Cheap billionaires.
Every time you feel like there's a positive headline, there's an immediate counterpunch.
What's the positive headline?
I felt like getting the term sheet initially was like, that was quicker than I imagined. We got term sheets sent to the team. How about that? We talked about that on Friday of like, that's a step in the right direction. We had that conversation on the air Friday.
Yeah.
Some of it felt like, they might not agree to all of it.
Things were things he was going to like very much.
It's an opening negotiation, though. We actually had progress.
We will talk to somebody that's lived through the Tom Dundon negotiating experience. Chip Alexander covered it in Carolina. Still over there. Doing a great job. And he'll join us at 8:27. Jason Quick with the report on The Athletic. And so we'll get to that coming up here at the top of the hour. Football coverage on The Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. And want to remind you, Binary Brewing and The Fan have teamed up for the only Fan IPA available for a limited time. Taste Fan, Taste The Fan with Binary Brewing's signature West Coast IPA. Go to Binary Brewing's Beaverton location and ask them about their only fan. So good, only The Fan and Binary Brewing can pull it off.
Ooh, I like it.
Get to some college football today. We got SEC Media Days happening.
Yes, we do.
Did you catch the last game of the must-watch Blazer Summer League experience with Young Hansen scoring 8 points?
I did not catch the last Blazer Summer League game this weekend.
Eight points on 8 shots and 5 turnovers.
Yeah.
But he got 10 rebounds, and his feet are moving quicker than I've ever seen them.
We're picking them up, putting them down a little bit faster than we were last year.
Picking them up, putting them down.
That's what we call progress, baby. That's why we should play him. Remember when they floated the idea? We don't even know if he's going to play. One game might be done. He doesn't need it.
He was too good. They thought he'd be too good for the Summer League.
Let's see a little bit more.
He played every game but one. Because he got sick.
He got sick for a night and then played. Who hasn't gotten sick in Vegas? We've all been there, Young. And then played the rest of the Summer League. So congrats. In Golden State, I did see won the championship. Hang the banner. Here they come.
Linda Borg or Boozer? Summer
big old
debating.
Fourth quarter rally against Memphis last night.
I'll take your word for it. Am I getting butt cracked on the Linda Borg, Draymond Green stuff, the back and forth? Have you seen any of that?
Oh, it's real.
That's actually real. Okay. What are we doing?
He's like, I'm going to check that rookie. And it's like, dude, last guy you checked, you punched in the face.
Maybe not punch our teammates in the face. Also, so maybe just not be a raging
D.
Yes.
Yeah.
At all times.
If he was a Blazer, though.
Not at this point. 5 years ago, 3 years ago, without a doubt. At this point, no. No. We don't need more non-shooters. I'm sure you're good defensively. I already have Matisse Thybulle on my team. I think you can make more shots than Matisse Thybulle.
You think Yaxel could...
Is he still a Blazer? Matisse is, right?
No.
No, never mind. He's not on our team anymore.
They have not re-signed him.
Maybe we could use Draymond Green then.
Again, as I point out, they're done. I don't know why people think
our team's tripping over themselves.
Draymond wants to mess with Yaxel.
I mean, I think he does, and that's part of the
problem. Well, he does, but I don't think that would...
I think you're way underselling Draymond's crazy.
No, I understand that.
He's got a different
level. Yaxel's big. He's young.
Why would you have such a stick up your bum that a rookie saying, like, hey, can I help, like, just jokingly saying, can I help recruit LeBron?
Yeah.
Why does that offend you?
I don't.
Why do you need to put that in his place?
I think it's a podcast thing.
I just don't.
I don't think it's a real thing. I think it's a podcast thing.
Yeah. There was a back and forth I saw from him saying that Kerr came out and said, you're getting tough to defend publicly. And it's like, yeah, man, because you keep being an idiot.
Yeah, there is that. I knew it was football season yesterday, not because the World Cup ended.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was making my trek down from Tacoma, we had to stop to get gas.
Mm.
And I stopped in beautiful Centralia, Washington.
Ah, yes.
Everybody wants to go to Centralia.
Drove through there myself this weekend.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
And so I got gas. I go in.
I'm going to plan my next spring break in Centralia.
The Twin Cities.
I know people that have to do that because of U Sports, and I just like, dude, that sucks.
Of all the places to go play.
Yeah, I've been to Centralia's not bad. There's way worse places to be than Centralia.
I mean, there is.
They have a Columbia clearance store. They've got a Nike outlet.
Is it ever not raining in Centralia?
It wasn't this weekend.
You sure about that? I think they have a permanent cloud over that city.
It was beautiful in Centralia, Washington. You shut your mouth, all right? Disrespect my beautiful Centralia, Washington. But I walked into the gas station.
Uh-huh.
Minding my own business, walk in, bing, boom, walk back to the cooler, get a drink. You like a real Niner fan? They're wearing a Niner shirt.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Uh-oh, 12s are chirping you. You're in our backyard.
I go loud and proud. Walk to the back, didn't even look at this person. I hear this. I don't think you should be in here. Now
that sounds like Centralia.
I'm assuming this is a banter Seahawk thing. So I go, you guys won the Super Bowl. What are you complaining about? My back is still to him, and I'm saying this pretty loudly with my drink. And I turn around, and he goes, I ain't no Seahawk fan. I was like,
Raider fan?
I go, who are you a fan of? Rams.
Get out of here.
I went, that's even more egregious.
Yeah.
You've already won a Super Bowl.
I shouldn't be here.
And you just had the best offseason of any team. You have an all-star team on paper. What is your problem? Well, you don't know that yet. Season hasn't started. I go, you want Bosa and I get Garrett? You want to do a trade-off here?
Oh, that'd be a nice swap. I'd do that swap.
And then he goes, I want to keep Myles Garrett, but we'll see how it goes this year. And I go, you guys are pretty good.
The
pretty good. He goes, how you feel about your team? I go, we're old. We're old.
Can but everybody stay healthy?
We might be all right.
We might win a playoff game if everybody stays healthy, or they get to play the Eagles again in the playoffs because they're a dumpster
Rams
fire.
Fan in Centralia.
The better response would have simply been, you don't belong in here either. Do you know what state we're in? Do the Rams play in Washington?
I was shocked he wasn't a 12.
I mean, look, a 12 chirping is still dumb because if you chirp like that, you probably got a 12 tattoo on the back of your leg and you stole it from Texas A&M. A Rams fan doing it in Centralia? Get out of here.
That's interesting.
That is embarrassing fan behavior. It's okay to have a little back and forth if you see somebody wearing a rivalry shirt.
Well, he ended up being a good-natured guy, but that's still start out
the
that
idea
way.
Of you don't belong here. What are you doing here? You're not in the right city or state either.
I hadn't heard a you don't belong here.
What you doing in here, buddy?
Since high school when we got accused of stealing from Kmart.
Why don't you turn that butt around and walk it out of this gas station?
Yeah, I was like, man, Centralia, you're really showing who you are here, huh? All right. It's football season, baby.
Centralia, stand up, man.
Hey, you know what? If it's going to lead me to football conversations, I'm all in, I guess.
That is very true.
Loaded second or third hour of the program, I should say. A lot to get into. We're going to dive into the Blazers. Jason Quick had the story. The city and the Blazers are not on good terms right now.
Yay.
We got a politician being quoted. I cannot get this guy to respond to an email, by the way.
Shocking he won't come on the radio and talk about his positions.
He'll just talk with Jason Quick on the phone. Hopefully somebody can get him. I'd love to talk to Mitch Green because he's quite loud about his position on this issue. So we'll dive into that, kickoff hour three. And then what is it like to negotiate with Tom Dundon and live through that experience? Chip Alexander will join us from Raleigh, North Carolina, Hour 3, Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 105.1, The Fan.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.